Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. On the 2nd of October was Mahatma Gandhiji's birthday, Gandhi Jayanti. And on Gandhi Jayanti, I was sharing one of my favorite teachings of Gandhiji, which is, what's the point of that fast speed, which has no direction? What's the point of going so fast if we have no direction? And that's exactly what's happening, as you've said, is we're moving so fast. But that speed itself is detrimental in many ways. And since we have no direction, we end up nowhere. I'm not sure that I would say that slow is always good and speed is always bad. I don't think that either of them is right or wrong inherently or intrinsically. I think that there's great value in both. The key, though, is that what makes slowness valuable? Otherwise, you'd say, well, what's the value in going slow? If I can do it fast, why do it slowly? The value in slowness is our ability to be aware. That proverbial slow down and smell the flowers. When we are moving fast, we tend to lose our anchoring in awareness. So we become mindless, we become unconscious, we end up inevitably saying and doing things that we later regret. That wasn't me, that's not what I meant. Those sorts of things almost always happen in times of stress because we're moving too quickly. We also end up losing that opportunity to really experience the depth and the joy of life if I'm not able to be aware. If I'm on autopilot, well, then I'm not really happy. Who's happy? Right? If I'm not even conscious in the moment, because I'm running on autopilot, because I'm running so fast that I can't be aware, juggling so many things that I'm nowhere. Well, then I'm not able to really experience deep joy, deep peace, deep meaning, deep connection. So we need to be slow in order to become aware. But as our ability to be aware grows, it doesn't mean that we always need to be really slow. So for example, in meditation retreats, one of the practices is a walking meditation, where you literally, as you know, as the feet are on the ground, you really pay attention so slow, such awareness, to the heel and then the ball of the toe, And then the toes, and then the heel comes up, and the weight gently shifts, and then the other foot. And you're moving so slowly as your heel, and then the ball, and then the heel rises. Now, it's a beautiful practice. And it's a beautiful practice to bring awareness into walking. But ultimately, that doesn't mean that that's the best way to always walk. The practice is one that teaches us to be aware. But ideally, we should be able to bring that level of awareness into whatever speed we find ourselves moving. Similarly, you do, you know, eating meditations or mindful eating where you take a raisin, a grape, and you eat it over the period of 20 minutes. One raisin, one grape. And you really feel every bit of the juice, bit of the sugar that as it touches the mouth and goes down, it's a great practice. Anybody who has mindless eating habits, anybody who's used to eating in front of the TV or their phones or social media or whatever they're doing, it's a great practice to learn how to slow down. It really brings awareness. But ultimately, I should be able to eat a full meal in half an hour, not just one raisin in half an hour, and still be aware. We shouldn't have to choose in our lives between awareness, joy, peace, and speed. So I think that slowness has incredible virtues and value. I think a lot of us are busy with no reason. We've gotten used to this just being busy. Moving really fast because we're really busy even though we don't actually have anywhere to go. We're just busy and stressed and rushed out of habit. And slowness is a perfect antidote to that. Slow down. And there's moments in life, there's times in life, there's things we do where it's great to be able to do them at some sort of an efficient speed. If I'm at an airport and I've got to get onto my flight that's boarding and it's at the last gate, me walking like this, like I would do in a meditation retreat, might make my walking even more mindful, but I'm going to miss my flight. So I need to be able to bring that level of mindfulness and awareness and connection into a life that also enables me to catch flights without having to show up at the airport the day before. And I think that's going to be really the key. Parenting, though, I would add a last point on parenting because it's something in and of itself. And you're absolutely right that in general we are over-parenting. And what do I mean by that? There's actually a lot of research around this, around children's ability to focus, to concentrate, to be happy. It used to be, kids would go out and they would play. I mean, this is true even from when I was young, and it was certainly true from when my parents were young, but even when I was young, you'd go out, and you'd play with your friends in the neighborhood. There were no mobile phones. There were no, you know, things that could be stuck on you so your parents could, you know, monitor where you were.
You'd play in the neighborhood, you'd play in the street, you'd end up at somebody's house for lunch, you'd end up at somebody else's house for lemonade, you'd bike ride here, and you just had to be home for dinner. They didn't know where you were. Nobody was micromanaging. You were inventing your own games, inventing your own rules, role-playing, all sorts of things. So it was pre-video games. You know, it wasn't the Middle Ages. We had TV and stuff, but we didn't have video games yet. I remember when those came out. And so it was this opportunity for play that didn't have this external imposition. What has happened in recent years is, and some of it I think has to do with parents feeling guilty because they don't feel like they've got enough time with their kids. Parents are really busy. Parents are really preoccupied. So when they are with the kids, they tend to be really kind of overbearing. And what we do then is we hyperplay. So let's say that the child is sitting there and the child is very happy playing with, let's say, something like this. It's nothing. It's just the thing that covers my glass of water. But let's say a child came over and picked it up and it's a frisbee. It's a UFO. It's a hat. It's, I mean, a whole world of games with this. As the child just begins to play, we, the parent, come in and we say, oh, look over here, look what I've got for you. Come on, play with this toy. And then the child just starts with that. And we say, oh, look here, look at this, the light. See, you push this, look what happens. On, off, on, off. And we don't actually give the child time to actually be engaged with anything that they're doing for longer than a few minutes at a time. Because as parents, we're so hyper that we pass that on to the kid. We're constantly, if you watch parents with kids for a while, you'll see we're constantly pulling out of their hands what they're working on and trying to put something else into their hands that we think they'll have more fun with. We're constantly trying to keep them so entertained. Now, they don't look bored. They're happily playing with this thing. But we think, well, that can't possibly be interesting. My iPad is much more interesting. Look, 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 here's all your games. And then something else. And so what we end up with is kids who tragically, at the very time that their brains are developing, end up being developed, primed, parented, taught to be constantly switching back and forth. They never learn to actually intensely focus on anything. They never learn to self-generate play because we are constantly throwing games and things in front of them. Imagination and creativity are perhaps the two most important things of childhood. But now with all of the technology and all of what we have and our own hyperness, we're not letting kids really be creative, really use their imagination. So we say, you know, the child, oh, this is my hat. And we say, no, 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 here's a hat. Oh, you want to buy a hat? Okay, let's go to Amazon and find you a hat. Well, the lesson was not about what a poor hat this is. The lesson was all about imagination and creativity and learning about their world. So slowing down for parenting is something I'm all in favor of. The idea that somehow we are the best parent based on how many hours of our child's day we fill with extracurricular activities, I mean, no one just plays in the neighborhood anymore. Because everybody's afternoons and evenings and weekends are so full of all of these activities, but these activities are all guided by adults. It's not kids getting together to play a game. It's adults as the coaches, the referees, the ones taking, the ones telling them what to do. The kids are just pawns in the adults' hands. So they're never getting that skill of their own creativity, their own imagination, learning to interact with the world in their own way, learning to interact with other kids in their own way. So I agree that it's very important to slow down in our parenting. Very important to allow children to just explore. Stop trying to prevent them from being bored. Being bored is actually great because they will create something. Let them be bored for 5 minutes. They're not going to sit there and be bored for 2 hours. They will invent something. They'll create something. They'll start playing with something. It's what kids do. But we're so worried that we're being bad parents if our child isn't entertained for 30 seconds. That we don't even give them the spaciousness for their own creativity. So I think bringing an idea of slow parenting is beautiful. And the last piece I would add to that is get them in nature. Because nature in and of itself is very slow. Things happen slowly, flowers open slowly, trees grow slowly. Things in nature move slowly, not, you know, little animals on the way, but nature itself. And the grounding, the literal grounding impact on their nervous systems of being in dirt, in sand, in water, in trees, in the sun, is probably the very best thing you can do for them.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. What gets you excited about life? What gets me excited about life? Many things. Number one, how incredibly patient the universe is. How no matter how many times we get distracted into ignorance, into illusion, into anger, into ego, into greed, into all of the places that we all get pulled,
that no matter how many times we get pulled off track, grace is always there just to keep welcoming us back. You know, most relationships in life, people do hit kind of a point where they say, you know what? I forgave you the first time, forgave you the second time, forgave you the 10th time, but now I'm done. Like now it's just been too many times. But grace is never like that. Doesn't matter how many times you've acted in anger, how many times you've gotten jealous or greedy or lustful or arrogant or mired in your ego, whatever it may be. Every time is fresh. There's no demerits. It's not like, well, you made such a mess of it last time that you're going to have to start, you know, 10 feet behind anyone else this time. None of that. Just fresh opportunity. Fresh opening, fresh presence of grace every single time we come back. There's no other relationship I know of where the arms are so open and available and present no matter how many times you've messed up in the past, no matter how badly you've messed up in the past. But the arms of grace are. And so to me, that's very exciting. What also excites me is how, because the universe is so patient, there isn't any sense that you're running out of time. Yes, why not get enlightened in this life? Absolutely, why not? We all can, we have the opportunity. And if you don't, it's okay. You got next life. You got the life after that. This idea that, you know, so many of us are so used to deadlines. Need this in by 5 p.m. Need this in by tomorrow morning. Need this in by this time, that time. And the universe is like, you know what? You want to do it this life? Great. You don't want to do it this life? That's okay. You'll come back. You'll do it next life. You can do it the life after that. And again, there isn't any judgment. There's no sense that we're somehow bad or wrong if we don't actually clear all of our karmic debts in this life or fulfill all of our soul's journey in this life. So there's this infinite patience that to me is so beautiful. And then the other last thing, I mean, again, there's so much that excites me about life. I love life. But just one last thing for now is all of the beautiful ways that we have in our human existence of interacting with the divine creation. So spiritually we know we're not the body, we're soul. We know that the highest truth, the deepest truth, is that all of these senses, this body, that it's all an illusion. That ultimately we are just soul, we're spirit. We're never born, we never die. There's no place I begin, no place I end. And yet, in the midst of that very deep and true and powerful, highest spiritual teachings and spiritual truth, we also have this beautiful human existence with these beautiful bodies, through which we are able to actually experience the divine creation, And so, yes, the body on some level is an illusion. Anything other than soul on some level is an illusion. And using your eyes to watch Mother Ganga flow is such a gift. Using your ears to listen to the sound of Vedic mantras be chanted is such a gift. Tasting water when you're thirsty and you take it in, especially if you're somewhere where you can just bend down and take it from a river or a stream. Taking in that natural world, that exquisite creation. Using all of our senses, using this body, not as something to be ignored or denied, but as this amazing instrument that we've been given to know the creation. So the body can't necessarily know God. Like, we can't know God with our brain. That's what we need to drop into the heart for. But we can know God's creation. We can experience the divine. You know, so many people say, how do I experience God? I want to see God, feel God. And that's something that so many people yearn for. And yet it's something that so many find it really difficult to ever actually experience. But the good news is that even if you can't actually yet see God or feel God, you can see and feel God's creation. We all have that ability. We can see, we can feel, we can hug the trees. We can dip in the sacred Mother Ganga or all of our water bodies. We can hear the birds. We can lie in the grass, in the soil. So until we have the ability to really experience the Creator, we have the ability to experience the creation, which to me is incredibly beautiful. And incredibly exciting.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
What is the bliss that we are told you experience spiritually? It's a bliss of union and a bliss of freedom. And I'm gonna use words and give it to you in a way that you don't have to already be a deeply evolved spiritual person to understand. Because for someone who's already experienced it, they don't need the words. So, bliss of union. Now, that connection that we have in coming together with a loved one. Think about it just as coming together with a loved one. Your daughter is there. She crawls in your lap. Right? Just take half a moment and allow your heart to feel how it feels when she crawls in your lap. Just that absolute, ever infinitely expanding ocean of joy. Maybe you were hungry, maybe you were thirsty, maybe you were a little stressed about a meeting, but the moment she's just crawled into your lap and now you feel her here, the hunger's gone, the thirst is gone, the meeting ever happens, doesn't happen, it's on some other plane of existence, right? So whether it's your child you're thinking about, he just had his daughter sitting there, so I gave that example. But think about anyone you love unconditionally, not someone you're having conflict with at the moment, not someone you're wanting things from right now, but someone you love unconditionally. Now, what does it feel like to be in that person's arms or in their lap? Or have them in your lap, depending on what the relationship may be. Now, do you feel this infinitely ever-expanding ocean of just beautiful, beautiful joy in you? That's the bliss of union. But when you experience it with God, rather than with a physical being, it's even more powerful. Because with physical beings, with any relationship, there's that sense of, in that relationship, you are me as father. You've got a role that you're playing. She's got a role that she's playing. There's some level of we are our bodies, we are our roles, and here in this role we love each other, father, daughter, husband, wife, mother, child. But when you are in union with God, there's no role, there's no story, it's not you in this body as this story, having a relationship with her in that body, having that story. It's you as spirit merging back into spirit. And so you take the bliss that you feel of the love of your daughter in your lap and you multiply it by God knows how many times, and you expand it beyond the ability that your human heart has to love. And that is the beginning of the understanding of the bliss of union. Then there's the bliss of freedom. Now think for a moment about something that you may desire. It's almost dinner time. Maybe you desire a pizza or some ice cream or just some really wonderful chowel doll, whatever it may be. Now, when you get that, so just think for a moment, let's say that you're desiring chocolate ice cream. And now, of course, that I've said it, you'll keep desiring it. Now, when you actually taste that chocolate ice cream, something very powerful happens. We lick it, and our whole being goes, ah, and we sort of melt in that joy. However, and here's the powerful subtlety, it isn't actually the chocolate ice cream that brings us that much joy. The amount of joy that our taste buds are able to experience and that part of the brain is able to experience, it's very little. Yeah, it's nice. I mean, we certainly like food that tastes good. But that absolute sense of, ah, is far beyond what actually chocolate ice cream can give you. The bliss of that moment is not from the object of my desire. But it is because, and this is the powerful subtlety, in that moment, I am no longer desiring. While I'm eating my chocolate ice cream, I am no longer desiring chocolate ice cream. It is the freedom from the desire that gives us that much joy. The real, is essentially the being, the true being saying, oh, thank God I'm no longer desiring this thing. And that's the really powerful joy. Now you imagine that instead of getting that freedom through indulging every desire, because of course the joy only lasts briefly, right? I've had the chocolate ice cream, now it's over, now I desire another one or something else. But now if instead of that, I actually become free of desire in general, so that I'm living my life in that constant state of, oh, thank God I am not desiring. Well, that's bliss. Because it's our desires that steal our bliss. So you've got the bliss of union, the bliss of freedom, and the bliss of truth. Because imagine that you've been keeping a secret or telling a lie for a really long time. So long, in fact, that you may even forget it's a lie. But in your subconscious, you know. Energetically, you know. And when you finally speak the truth, you finally share that secret, there is again a joy, a very, very powerful, deep joy of finally being in the truth. Even if it comes with some embarrassment, even if it comes with having to make some apologies, nonetheless, that joy of finally being in truth is so much. So this bliss that we speak about spiritually is a bliss of union, a bliss of freedom, and a bliss of truth. And there may be more. I'll keep you posted if I find others, other sources of bliss along the way.
No, Ramana Maharshi has said desirelessness is bliss.
Yes, absolutely it is. Desirelessness is bliss. For me, on a personal level, the bliss that I feel in the union, and of course when we talk about samadhi, well, samadhi is union, but it's blissful union, it's ecstatic union. It's the union of two become one. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons to embark on a spiritual path.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. a philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
The decision, you're speaking about a transformation in our world. The internal transformation, that catalyst of it, tends to happen in a powerful way. We have a moment, we have an experience. Sometimes it also happens slowly and gradually. There's many ways that the internal one happens. In terms of the external alignment aspect, there's some parts that I would say should be as immediate as possible. And those are gonna be things like habits in our life that are not just not conducive, but actually detrimental to our practice. So whether it's things like alcohol or drugs or non-veg or an addiction to shopping therapy or spending 10 hours a day scrolling aimlessly on Facebook. I mean, these are things that I would say there's no reason to ease yourself out as quickly as you can possibly free yourself from that, the better. Similarly, in terms of activities that distract us. So for example, nothing wrong with, you know, shows, movies, nothing. I'm not going to say thou shalt never watch TV or a movie, but pay attention to what you're watching. So for example, maybe you decide I'm no longer going to watch violence because it distracts me energetically. It's a lot harder to get back into a deep meditation after you emerge from some movie or TV show that's been, you know, full of violence. So there's decisions that we can make that we can actually do right away. If you say the whole thing's going to be gradual, well, that's all right. I mean, the universe is infinitely patient. You have as many lifetimes as you would like. So no one's going to say, you know, speed it up. This has to be your last lifetime. But the question, of course, to ask yourself is, why? I mean, if I know that these things are detrimental to my spiritual path, why not just stop them? But then you've raised an interesting point about going slowly in order to keep other people happy or not to hurt them. Now, this is a really delicate and tricky situation Because on the one hand, as spiritual beings, we are committed to compassion, to loving kindness, to caring, to not harming, to ahimsa. And yet, the dilemma is the sheer number of lives that have been ruined by worrying about samne wale kya sochega, parosi kya kahenge. And so I'm a very staunch advocate for no longer worrying about what samne wale is thinking, what the neighbors are thinking. I've never heard of anybody at the end of their life who said, my God, I wish I had kept the neighbors happier. My God, I wish more people had looked at me and been jealous or said, wow, 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 kya, kya, kama. You never hear of people regretting that they didn't pay more attention to their social reputation. You hear the opposite. You hear people saying, God, I wish I hadn't spent so much time worrying about ye tik lakta, ye tik ne lakta, wo kya sochenge, ijet ki baat hai, to pura jeevan usme chale jate. So you've got to ask yourself, who is the person you're trying to keep happy? And is what you're doing really keeping them happier? So, for example, let's say that I used to go out with friends every Friday night to the pub, and we would get drunk. Then I decide I don't want to do that anymore. Well, I don't think that we need to go out for at least another few times in order to ease my friends into the idea that I no longer do this. I would much rather invite them all over for a cup of coffee on a Sunday morning rather than the bar on a Friday night and say, hey, you know, I had this amazing experience in Rishikesh. I'm no longer drinking. I don't judge you. I've decided to change my life, so I'm not going to be joining you Friday nights. But hey, if Sunday morning coffee sounds good, I'm very happy to do Sunday morning coffee. We underestimate people's ability to handle things. We frequently think, oh, this one won't be able to handle it. They're going to be very upset. They'll have a fit. And so we run our own lives in ways that are not in alignment because we're constantly trying to sort of protect others. But the truth is, most people are a lot stronger than we give them credit for. And if presented with a challenge, most people, at least people on any kind of a spiritual or self-development path, will rise to the challenge. If I'm one of the drinking friends of someone who says, I'm not going to drink anymore, well, I would hope that I can rise to the occasion and say, that's wonderful. Sure, let's have coffee Sunday morning. Or, hey, you know, we don't have to gather at a bar on Friday night. Let's go to a coffee shop instead or a restaurant instead. If I want to drink, I'll drink. You don't have to drink. We'll be able to rise to the occasion. The only people who aren't able to do that is people who are absolutely stuck in their own drama, in their own ego, in their own stories. And then the question becomes, am I really helping them? Because there is a big difference between helping someone and enabling them. Helping benefits them. Enabling them is just allowing them to continue to live in a way that is not healthy. And so if you've made a powerful, spiritual, positive change, that should have nothing but ripples of positivity. It doesn't mean everyone's going to handle it in a great way immediately. Somebody may be attached to you drinking, because if you stop drinking, well, then I have to look at myself. You're drinking with me, so I don't have to look at anything. You stop drinking. Well, then you become like a mirror in my face of why am I drinking? And a lot of times we don't want to look in the mirror. But the truth is, if you end up as a mirror in my face, that's actually the kindest thing you ever could have done for me. So don't think, well, I'll just keep drinking so that she doesn't have to look at this mirror and get uncomfortable. If there are people, though, who for whatever reason you really feel will be hurt in some way by your spiritual transformation, well, tap into your heart. Your heart's your best guide. Tap into your heart. Tap into your own inner way of knowing while you're here, before you go back and get wrapped up in Maya, of I'm having this thought that this person may need a gradual thing. And really just listen for some inner guidance. What's really the kindest thing in the moment to you, your spiritual path, and also their unfolding? You know, when I was 25 and decided I was going to move to India and stop my PhD and move to an ashram on the banks of Ganga, my mom had a fit. As you can imagine, right? Now, I knew she would, which was why, in a very strategic way, I put it to her in a letter first and figured let her have her fit on her own, and when she calms down, then we'll actually talk about it. But I knew she would. And in the letter, I said, I very much want to help her out of her fit as smoothly as possible. And that by letting her know, A, by giving it to her with a letter first, of like, you have your reaction, no problem. We'll talk whenever you're ready. You let me know. But then by letting her know that no one was going to benefit by the fit. All it was going to do was drive us farther and farther apart. She was able to rise to the occasion. Was I scared? Terrified. I mean, I was really worried. I didn't know. I didn't realize how strong she was. I had a sense. I took a risk. But there was absolutely this sense of, oh my God, maybe she's really going to break. Maybe I really won't be able to go. Maybe this is going to be a catastrophe on some level rather than a blessing. But she rose to the occasion. Put into that place of knowing that no good was going to come. She found a place within. It took her a few days to have a conversation and a few months to actually, until I was actually leaving. But, you know, she was with me the evening I left to get on the airplane to fly back, helping me pack, helping me get ready. I mean, it didn't take her very long in the scheme of things. If you imagine the, you know, Jewish mother of an only child who's 25 who's just announced they're heading back to India. A couple months is nothing to really come around. And it was beautiful. And to see how she changed over the last 26 years. Me putting her in that situation actually catalyzed her unfolding and her growth and her blossoming. In the most beautiful way. Was it easy? No. Did she continue to struggle in different ways at different times? Sure. Sure. But she kept growing. She kept stepping up. She kept growing. She kept... And it was an incredible lesson because most of our loved ones really will rise to the occasion. And if they don't, remember, the universe is infinitely patient. They don't learn it this lifetime, no problem. They'll learn it next time. It's okay. So we move as gently and lovingly and compassionately as we can. But we don't forsake our dharma in order to walk on eggshells around someone else's fragile ego or attached agenda. That doesn't serve anyone.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.